Some of us have drive, and some of us are beyond driven. Welcome to Beyond Driven Radio, bodybuilding's first stand. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Beyond Driven Radio. I'm your host, David Johnson. And counting the minutes before he gets to flee the country and go on an awesome vacation with me, Mr. Scott McNally. How you doing, Scott?
Dude, I am doing good, man. I'm pumped, and I'm also pumped that we could get this interview in before I go, because I love this guy. He's got a great physique, man, and I'm excited.
Well, it's funny. Let's jump right into it. Our guest today, Mr. Terrence Ruffin. How you doing, Terrence?
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm doing great. I can't complain. Beautiful awesome. Day.
Absolutely. It's sunny outside in January, so no complaints from me either. To introduce Terrence, you know, some of the guests that we've had on, we've had Evan Santapani, John Del Rosa, you know, some more quote-unquote old-school bodybuilders. Terrence, you know, I was actually blessed to be there in 2014 at the Nationals when he won the lightweight class.
Nice.
So, I mean, we'll just jump right into it. I want to talk today basically about, you know, bodybuilding and classic physique. And those that are kind of bridging the gap between the two divisions, just a lot of interesting talking points there. So Terrence, you know, you did Nationals that year. You were a lightweight. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe for about 15 minutes, you held the record for being the youngest pro in the world when you won your pro card, correct?
Yeah. Well, not yeah. Me and Dominic turned pro. He's actually a little bit older than me. Like,
oh, okay.
3 months. Yeah. So gosh. I'm a little bit, yeah.
So you retain the record even through the heavyweights when Dominic Cardone turned pro.
Yes, yes.
So you went pro in bodybuilding, and then, you know, a little bit later transitioned to classic, but I just kind of want to hit it right off the bat. In your opinion, you know, what should bodybuilding be all about? If somebody has, let's say, bad lines, they just have thicker joints, you know, and I'll use myself as a prime example. Over the years, I built enough muscle mass to be kind of competitive, but wide hips, thicker joints, very endomorphic. I'm probably built more for powerlifting or strongman. Well, not probably. I'm definitely built more for powerlifting or strongman.
You know, you're blocky a beast.
I'm a blocky white guy. You know, I'm Scottish. You know, do you think bodybuilding? You know, if you have bad lines, thick joints, no taper, short muscle bellies, should they be able to beat somebody or be competitive against somebody who has beautiful lines, beautiful muscle bellies, but let's say they only come in 85% conditioning? Give us your breakdown, you know, on what to you is bodybuilding in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, I'll start with that, and then we can talk about the conditioning portion.
Sure.
But, I mean, you know, I drew a lot of, inspiration from older school guys, and I guess most guys in classic usually do. You know, you got your Arnold, you got your Serge Nubray, Muhammad Makawi, guys like that, Lee Labrada. And I really think those, you know, were really great guys where they maybe could have gotten bigger. I know Rich Gaspari said he pushed the limits a little bit and he didn't like where his physique was going. Hmm. So, you know, he dropped 5 or 10 pounds and he stayed there. And I really like the idea of, you know, keeping your proportions and your structure over gaining, you know, a lot of mass. And that's what kind of, you know, kind of influenced my ideas of what bodybuilding should be. You know, first it comes, you know, you think of the beauty and the art of it. And, you know, the size is kind of secondary, which is still important. You still need, you know, some muscle mass to look good.
Sure.
But it shouldn't compromise, you know, your look.
Well, and to be honest, the reason I ask, if you don't mind my asking, Terrence, how old are you now?
I am 24.
All right, so you're 24. I'm an old man. I'm 38. Scott's even older. I believe he's 40.
He likes to point that out all the time.
right. Yeah, you look younger, so you're winning the war. But, you know, we came from that generation right before yours where really, you know, the mass monsters peaked and kind of set the standard, if you will. I think, you know, Scott and myself were influenced by those same individuals, the sure. Arnolds, the Muhammad Makawi, all of that, you know, Serge Dubray. But when we really got into it, you know, Lavroni and then Dorian and JP Fuchs, I mean, they were standing at the forefront. And it was really all about, you know, getting as big as you could, obviously still with conditioning, but really pushing the envelope with size. What interests me is, you know, you guys that are 10 to 20 years younger, having come up seeing kind of the end result of the Mass Monster game, do you feel that that influenced you from the very beginning to almost not be concerned with size at all costs? Let me ask that. Because, like, when I got into it, I was looking at Ronnie Coleman train, and I just, you know, I wanted to be 300 pounds, man.
Yeah, we all did.
Was there ever a part of you that looked at, you know, a Ronnie or a Dorian and said, man, I want to chase that?
Yeah, I love Ronnie. I love Ronnie. He's like the only bodybuilder I've actually bought in, like, his DVDs.
Sure.
Like you said, when I turned pro in 2014, I did see, like, the end result. That was my first time seeing him in person. And, you know, at that time, he had just had either, like, his hip surgery or something like that. So he was on crutches. And it was kind of, like, you know, jaw-dropping to see this, you know, guy I've seen on TV and videos, 300 pounds, you know, to when I actually met him, you know, a lot smaller. He couldn't even walk. It was a, you know, a stark contrast.
Right.
But
go ahead.
But, you know, I do love the Mass Monsters. I would say my favorite guy is Marcus Rule.
Oh, really?
Dude's shoulders were awesome. That's probably my favorite Mass Monster.
Yeah. Well, he's way up there in terms of the total freak factor. But when you were looking at someone like Ronnie and seeing, you know, the end result, I remember that the 50th Olympia, I believe it was, when they brought in all the former champs. And, you know, Ronnie comes in. He just recently had a surgery, and he comes in with the two arm braces, kind of like crutches, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's your childhood hero in a sense. It's kind of sad to see this god among men kind of, you know, fallen a little bit to be mortal in his later years. Was it more the consequence that you saw it took on his health in terms of joints and surgeries and stuff like that that kind of influenced how you wanted to go about your training? Or was there an aesthetic component as well where you looked at the guys that really chased size, kind of saw what it was doing to their midsections, and, you know, we've all heard about the guts and stuff like that. Was it a little bit of both? Was it more aesthetic? What influenced your kind of path more, would you say?
So it did influence my way that I trained. I train under, you know, guys like at the MI40 gym now. They train really smart. I've trained with John Meadows a few times.
Sure.
Just to, you know, a lot of these older guys who've been through it, who know, like, you shouldn't do this. It may not hurt you right now. But, like, with Ronnie, when you get older, it's going to, you know, come back to, you know, haunt you. So that's what affected me, my training style. As for the size, I'm just I chose classic because that's where I fit in, honestly. So that's kind of more of what it was.
Sure. All right. So I'm going to ask a follow up on that, you know, kind of a tough question, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Right. Yeah. Well, and again, like, everyone's going to have with so much of this stuff, everyone has their opinion, obviously. So it's become a really tricky situation in our industry because there's so many people that are quote unquote haters, but I don't want to talk about haters, just needlessly negative, meaning there's a way to assess a physique and say that you're not necessarily a fan of it or you don't agree that it's the right direction for bodybuilding without being a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
And so many of the kids on the boards these days, just the way they talk, you know, oh, so-and-so looks like dog shit.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't think that's appropriate. It's not constructive. It doesn't really help anybody. But at the same time, I'm sure you do have opinions on, you know, what makes for a champion physique and what you don't like. Okay. So, you know, before Ronnie was Dorian, and Dorian was kind of my idol in a lot of ways, really, you know, took the direction from Lee Haney of being more about beautiful lines and, you know, taper and all that, more than probably any other singular person, pushed the sport more towards size and conditioning. And not because he, you know, he didn't have a choice, meaning Dorian's lines were Dorian's lines.
Yeah.
You know, all he could do is work with what he had. But many kind of viewed Dorian as, you know, the grandfather, if you will, of moving the sport in a direction that it would later have to recover from. Do you kind of view it like that, or you just think Dorian was doing what he had to be the best he was, and, you know, it was kind of inevitable the sport went the direction it did?
I think, you know, it's funny. I love Dorian's physique. I think more so the person who pushed it, or really pushed it, was Ronnie, actually. I mean, just to see how he did it, I mean, Dorian, he was, you know, he pushed the size standard, but, you know, everything was still tight. He was still, you know, controlled right. on stage and everything. You don't really find bad pictures of Dorian so much as you do with, you know, like Ronnie Coleman or guys from Ronnie's era, like J.P. Fuchs. And, you know, it's just, I think, yeah, Dorian kind of opened the door, but, like, Ronnie was the main one who kind of changed the direction, in my opinion.
Well, and it's an interesting point because when people slag on Dorian, you know, part of the criticism is the torn biceps or the fact that he didn't have, you know, the roundest muscle bellies, for example. He didn't have huge round arms. But those are things that were truly outside of Dorian's control. You know, yeah. like he just brought the size and condition that he could bring. But you make a good point, Terrence. On average, he really wasn't distended very often. Like he did a pretty good job of really controlling his midsection. He just happened to have kind of bigger hips and, you know, be a little blockier versus Ronnie. Like we saw a really clear contrast from the early portion of his career to the later portion of his career, going from a guy that had some of the best lines out there
yeah.
to a guy who kind of blew out his midsection. Well, not kind of, I mean, he absolutely did.
Yeah.
Chasing as much size as he could. And then, and it's interesting because even yesterday, you know, Chad Nichols posted a throwback Thursday shot. Scott, did you open to see it?
I didn't know. Not yet.
It was a picture yes. of Ron. Yeah, you saw the picture of Ronnie the night before, what was the 04 Olympia. And that was, 03 was when Ronnie made that huge size jump to 287. 04 came in even bigger, 296, 297. And then they put out the memo, the IFBB, saying you guys got to, you know, bring in the guts. So I went out there in 05, and Ronnie purposely came down 20 pounds in 05 to 275. And he streamlined to try to get the midsection smaller, but it's an interesting point because between Dorian and Ronnie, he went from a guy who like made the best of what he had over to Ronnie where he could have really stayed aesthetic. You know, he really could have stayed tapered and a smaller waist, but he at a certain point clearly chose to chase size at the cost of his lines, I would say. I don't think you could really say that about Dorian, you know? And Scott, would you agree with that? Hello?
I agree.
Sorry, I lost somebody.
I think Scott, yeah.
No, we're here. I'm here. I'm just listening intently.
Well, and it's an interesting point. I mean, I don't want to commandeer the conversation, but I'd never thought of it like that, that, you know, there is that difference between Dorian and Ronnie. One of them, it was kind of a byproduct of their genetics. One of them, it was more a byproduct of their decisions, you know, how they went about training and nutrition and supplementation. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Terrence, do you think, you know, a couple of years ago we had the Atlantic City show, I want to say 2013 maybe, you know, and we had a Cedric McMillan who was in really good shape, but of course not 100% dry and grainy. And he was beat, you know, by Branch Warren, who was dry and grainy, but of course lacks lines, doesn't have the beautiful flow of a Cedric. In your opinion, like, let's look at a specific example. Should 100% Branch Warren be able to beat an 85% conditioned Cedric McMillan? In your opinion, does that further the cause of bodybuilding in terms of its popularity with the public, or does it just leave people kind of confused? And again, I'm not asking you to officiate here. I'm asking, what do you think? If you're running the IFBB, what are your thoughts on what should really trump in that situation?
You know, that is a tough question because I'm like, what is 85% for Cedric?
Right.
Because has he ever come in at 100? But I would say, like, oh man.
Well, who do you give the call to and why? Just do it that way. We can't fix hard numbers to what we do. We know that. So reason.
I can do it a comparison between other people. Like say between Ronnie Coleman and Flex Wheeler, you know, sure. Ronnie was always 100. I always loved it. I love Flex Wheeler's, you know, shape a lot more than Ronnie. Ronnie had, you know, he was more conditioned.
Right.
So you can kind of do it that way. But as for, I would say, like a Branch Warren and Cedric, I think it's a tough one. I would say it really depends. But if Cedric, you know, wasn't completely fat, I would probably give it to Cedric just because to give people an idea of, you know, where we want the sport to go in terms of physiques. Yeah, I would probably say that because Cedric's 85% is, I guess, pretty still pretty good for Cedric.
Right. Well, and so much of that plays down to, you know, what do you consider fundamental?
Yeah.
To bodybuilding. You know, what is of most importance? So again, you know, I don't want to rip into the guy, but last year at the Olympia, obviously with Phil Heath, there was a lot of discussion about his midsection and some distension. And he started hearing a lot of apologists saying, well, you know, his midsection, that's just one body part. So if he's complete everywhere, which is a strange way of looking at it. Like, well, we don't just accumulate body parts, because if we do, like, I didn't get the list of body parts that are being judged. Like, do they judge the anterior tibialis?
Exactly.
You get the point. So once you start saying, oh, well, it's just a midsection. Yeah, but if it influences the overall shape and flow, such that you show it to any average person on the street and they say, that's not athletic, I don't understand it.
Exactly.
At a certain point, it becomes kind of an esoteric, you know, study in what is required to be a bodybuilder, rather than kind of stepping back and looking at the big picture.
I agree. Like, the whole concept is very important. Like, a lot of guys have, even with, like, Branch, he has, you know, amazing legs.
Sure.
You know, one of the best legs in the sport, but you can't judge someone just off one body part, in a sense. It's like the whole, you know, the whole shape.
Well, and that's the other thing. If you do that with Branch, again, I'm a Branch fan. I respect the hell out of him. I love him. And believe it or not, 10 years ago, I probably would have been pulling more for Branch than for Cedric. I mean, yeah. people that listen to Geared Up know that. I used to dog Cedric for not bringing the condition. But I also kind of saw the consequence of that over time, to where people just understood the calls less and less and less. And I'm not talking, you know, the man on the street. I'm talking like when we interviewed Tony Freeman, Scott, if you recall, he said, hey, I love the sport and I've been in it for 30 years and I don't understand the calls. And when that's the case, it means you need to possibly reevaluate how those calls are made, you know, what factors into them, to what degree. Terrence used a great example with Ronnie and Flex. And it's a great example because, like, you know, even though Flex was prettier, Ronnie was so overwhelming in his size and in his conditioning that you could easily give him the nod to trump the prettiness on Flex's shape. But where we run into problems is two people that really are outliers on opposite ends, you know, a Cedric and a Branch. Or even, you know, in recent years when people were comparing Kai and Phil, each one's strengths is something the other person doesn't have, but each one's weaknesses is, you know, something the other person just exploits. So it makes it really tricky. So Terrence, we mentioned after you went pro in bodybuilding, you know, you switch over to Classic. They announced the addition of the Classic division shortly after you turned pro. What exactly was your thought process and reasoning for the switch over? What factors played into your decision?
Okay, so I'm going to be completely honest. At first, I decided not to switch. I turned pro in bodybuilding, you know, even though I'm only like 150 pounds, I'll just, you know, ride it out. And because, you know, the one guy I really look up to is Sean Clarita. You know, he was really, really light. And he's still, you know, he's smaller than me. He's shorter than me, let me say that. And he weighs, but he still comes out and kicks ass, you know, in these shows. This guy, you know, 10 times his size. But what happened was, I actually honestly just missed the stage. And I didn't want to get on a 212 stage and just not just yet. So I was like, Matt talked me into it. Matt Porter, my coach, he said, how about you know, give it a try? And I was like, okay. So we decided like that January or February that we would do a show. And since I've switched, honestly, nothing has really changed with my training or my eating or anything, because I don't gain a lot of weight that easily, honestly.
Right.
So, and honestly, I've been under the weight limit each year, so because they keep raising it. So it's been pretty fortunate where I can, you know, grow in bodybuilding still. And, you know, maybe when I'm in my 30s and I actually, you know, reach that limit or whatever, I would honestly think about switching back to 212. But that's what kind of led me to switch. And honestly, with Classic, I don't like the shorts, and I wish they would add a few more poses, but it's not that different from bodybuilding, you know, from my perspective, what my situation is.
Sure.
No, I agree with all that 100%. Now, you know that when somebody is really invested in bodybuilding and, you know, quote unquote, chasing their pro card or they're on the hunt, it becomes very meaningful to kind of identify yourself as a bodybuilder. You know, I'm sure that you had that, Terrence. I had that, Scott. You have that.
Oh yeah.
Was there a part of you that almost, you know, because you said when you first turned pro, like you were going to stick with bodybuilding. Was there a part where it was almost mentally difficult to say, all right, I'm going to choose to not define myself technically as a bodybuilder, even though, and Terrence, you're still a bodybuilder, man. You're lifting weight. You're chiseling your physique in aesthetic fashion with all the same principles that bodybuilders use. So if nothing else, it's just a change in name, you know, and to that degree, like you said, you train the same, you eat the same. It's not that big a deal. But was there a part of you that, you know, it was kind of sad almost that you couldn't technically be a pro bodybuilder that's, you know, supporting bodybuilding, that you had to kind of make the change based on the standards that are out there these days?
Yeah, I do. And it kind of sucks, you know, to see all the time the infighting where, you know, already, you know, bodybuilding as a you know, whole as a sport is like already being, you know, it's a small sport as it is. And just to see this infighting all the time is kind of annoying, honestly, where we should be trying to uplift, you know, the whole IFBB and PC. But we can't get past, you know, this guy wearing a different pair of shorts or something like that.
Right. Well, talk about that for a second. Great opportunity. Why should fans of bodybuilding embrace and support classic physique? You know, specifically appeal to my generation and guys that are maybe 10 years older. The guys that just were all about mass at all costs, whether it was Marcus Rule or JP Fuchs, and they've, you know, you, I'm sure you hear it, Scott, you hear it, I hear it. A lot of people have the mentality that it's a concession to purposely downsize, you know, like, oh, why would I purposely aim for anything less than the most possible?
Right.
Well, and that's what bodybuilding, you know, kind of is. It's a sport of extreme. So I get it. But at the same time, Terrence, in your opinion, why should fans of bodybuilding embrace and support classic? What are the values that, you know, it's promoting that we should all be fans of?
You know, I'm just a fan of seeing different physiques, and classic brings like a different look that bodybuilding doesn't have.
Yeah.
Breon. I saw Breon next to Hide the other day, and they looked like the same size. Like, I've seen certain classic guys look just as big as some of the 212 guys, honestly. And it's really interesting to see that, but I just love the different looks that they bring. Like Breon right now, like his lines are ridiculous. Like he's like chiseled in detail like nobody I've ever seen.
Oh yeah,
and that's something unique that that classic brings. Some of the detail from some of these guys is different. A lot of open bodybuilders and 212 guys. There's some very detailed guys, but I just give, like, let's say like a Rami, for instance, he doesn't come close to the separation that Breon has, you know?
Right.
So there's some differences in there, that, you know, can appeal to people. It's not just smaller bodybuilders up there. There's actually a difference in the look.
Do you think that the posing routine should be factored into classic physique scoring?
Oh, man.
Because I know that you're a big fan of classic posing.
Yes.
And again, like, I'm not asking for you to, you know, politic for a change in the IFBB or anything like that. But I think a lot of old school fans feel that the sport of bodybuilding lost some of its heroic calling, if you will, you know, in part by doing away with posing, stuff like that.
I think for classic, it doesn't need to be factored in, just because I think there's some aspect about classic where a lot of these guys, you know, actually they like to pose and they put together some pretty cool routines. But I will say in bodybuilding and in the 212 class, I remember watching Arnold last year.
Yeah.
And when they added that aspect in, these guys came up a lot with the routines they put together because, like, hey, I gotta, you know, make something good. So I think, but at the same time, we do see where, like, it is an issue that comes up where, like, this guy doesn't look as good as the next guy, but he wins because of the routine, which, you know, it's a whole other, like, discussion. So I think I remember somebody bringing up about bodybuilding where the score that they use on Arnold was a little high if they brought it down a bit.
Okay.
It could work. But that's what I think about that.
So essentially, it could be something that helps to, you know, split a decision if it's super, super close.
Yeah.
But other things, even just the better physique should be the one that wins, pretty much point blank.
You know, speaking of that, back in the day, I remember watching Arnold do an interview when they would do their pose down. That was actually they actually scored that, and it was strategic. Arnold would talk about, this guy hit this pose, so I'm going to switch to this one because I look better in this pose.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. So, you know, that's just something I was thinking of. Was
sure.
Interesting.
Well, and they've played with variations of that over the years, like during Arnold's day when they had the tall and the short class, and yeah. Then they'd pick each winner and they'd, you know, pose down for the overall. And similarly, you know, in the 2000s, they introduced the challenge round at the Olympia for a couple of years. I personally felt it was because they kind of knew that Ronnie wasn't going to get beaten until Ronnie retired. Okay. And so they were looking for ways to make it more engaging and interesting for fans. Because, you know, let's be honest, a bodybuilding show isn't a football game. It's not the most rah-rah yell and jump out of your seat with excitement. A lot of time we kind of know the conclusion before we get to it. So I've seen them, you know, play with different ways of trying to inject a little more excitement into it. And I think that's interesting. But Terrence, what you just mentioned where there was strategy involved with the pose down, you know, because you could actually use it to kind of win. I think that speaks to an era where they were judging more, you know, looking at a bodybuilder not as a collection of body parts, like we said, but kind of their entire aura on stage, including, you know, their swagger, their poise, all that stuff that we can't really evaluate in terms of percentages, you know, but we still hear to this day, that's why Arnold, you know, was who he was and was able to do what he did. Terrence, you mentioned, you know, the posing trunks, not a huge fan of them for Classic. What do you think needs to be changed about Classic, you know, besides the trunks, if anything? What would you like to see changed?
So like I said, the trunks, but I can understand why they have them to differentiate us from the open class in 212. I think they could just add in all the poses. I don't see why they would take any out, honestly. I mean, it's easier on the competitors. We don't get as winded. I remember doing, doing nationals and being completely exhausted after doing my quarter turns. But now they got rid of the front and back lat spread, the most muscular, the side tricep. You know, that's four poses. So I think they could add those back in, honestly.
I think so, too. That'd be great.
Sure. Well, and again, I think I understand why they don't have it. You know, they're trying to be throwback bodybuilding, if you will. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you know, the popularity of bodybuilding, heaven forbid, does decline in the following years, I hope they grow Classic to fill whatever gaps, you know, bodybuilding used to fill. And I'm not talking, you know, immense size necessarily, but the overall presentation and, you know, what they do on stage. Okay. And I got to ask you, Terrence, because you're the first Classic guy I've had the opportunity to talk to in an interview. You know, we know you come in really good shape. You're working with Matt Porter. You're shredded, no doubt about it. Is there a degree of frustration getting on that stage knowing that I'm sure you have striated glutes and fully separated hamstrings, but you got to cover it up wearing spandex shorts? Is there a part of you that wishes you could get up there and just really show off your full conditioning? It's got to be frustrating, man. I mean, I know how hard you work to get there.
You know, I just do it in my Instagram pictures. And, you know, if you notice, pretty much every Classic guy wears, you know, regular bodybuilding trunks when they do a guest posing, too.
It's so funny because now bodybuilders wear the Classic spandex trunks when they guest pose.
Right.
Everyone wants to be something they ain't.
So, yeah, I mean, it is frustrating. But you know what? The hamstrings show just fine. And I'm lucky because I got like the Ronnie Coleman glutes, so they show through the trunks and everything.
Right.
But yeah, I would wish that they would kind of shrink, even if it's like the 70s trunks or something, just so they can still say that the trunks are different or whatever. I think that would be nice.
Yeah. How about what, you know, we've heard a lot of criticism the first couple of years with the posing, specifically as regards the favorite classic pose. And I'm sure you've seen your share of, you know, pictures of the lineup where it looks like you just got a pack of wild cats that are just everybody's doing their own thing. Half the people aren't looking at the camera. What should they do to kind of, you know, clean that up, if anything? Should they standardize some classic poses?
That would be cool too, but I think the issue, we see that mostly on the amateur level. Like, it's really bad with the posing on the amateur level. Once you get to like the pro division, it's a little bit better.
Sure.
Most of the time. But I think that would be cool to have a few like mandatory classic shots to hit or something. That would be cool.
When you decided to make the transition and officially switch to classic, did you spend any time studying, you know, really laying into pictures of guys from the 70s and the 80s and trying to replicate specific classic poses?
So I was already posing. Like, that's why I'm different. I was posing like nonstop already, because that was my favorite part. Growing up, I was like, I was really into art. I drew a lot. I did different things like that. And that really appealed to me, that part, the posing part. And it's weird, like, one of the first bodybuilders I saw when I got started, like, on the internet was Kai Greene, and he made a big emphasis in the posing. So that I kind of, from the get-go, was, you know, from the get-go, I was into posing. So sure. I was already looking into it before Classic got started.
How much?
Go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to ask, how much time do you put into your posing on a regular basis, Terrence?
So it's kind of when I first started, it'd be a little too long, but I think to get good at posing, good at anything, you got to spend a lot of hours in the beginning to get yourself to a certain point.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, I was like sometimes 30 minutes to an hour after my workouts, which probably why I didn't grow too much. I spent too much time in the gym. But now I do it like, you know, 3-4 times a week for like usually 20-30 minutes.
Okay.
And so I kind of cut it back a bit, but I still try to pose pretty frequently.
Right on.
Well, and it's funny because like that's actually more of a classic approach to doing stuff. We always heard, you know, the dudes back in the day weren't doing an hour, hour and a half of cardio every day necessarily, so much as they were just spending tons of time, you know, actually training more or posing more. So it's funny, you kind of have a throwback approach when you're hitting that.
Yeah.
So we saw, you know, last year they increased the weight limit for Classic, at least in the pro ranks, I think in the amateur ranks as well. And they're doing it again this year too, right, Terrence? 5 pounds, I think?
Yeah, they upped it again, yeah.
All right. So we saw, you know, over the years with bodybuilding, they kind of let it run a little wild, you know. And again, that's not the fault of any officials or IFBB or anything. I think it's the nature of the beast with what we do. You naturally go in, try to train to get a little bigger, or you diet to try to get a little harder, leaner, freakier. That's, you know, what sets you apart. But by letting it run a little wild, it seemed like there weren't a ton of checks and balances in bodybuilding that we're going to hold it accountable to a certain aesthetic. We saw with women's bodybuilding, you know, and to a degree now with men's bodybuilding, they seem like they've become a little less appealing to the mainstream. Not that they were ever super appealing, but point being, you find a 16-year-old kid these days and show them an absolute mass monster, and it's going to be scary.
Yeah.
What checks and balances do you think should be kept in place specifically with Classic in order to ensure it doesn't walk that same path? So, you know, if they keep up in the weight limit every year, could you see it eventually hitting a point where it loses what makes it unique?
I would say yes. The thing, I think so. And I think the main thing is just keeping the weight limit. And I know a lot of people are upset, like, oh, I wish it was an extra this many pounds or that many pounds. But the thing is, they have this weight limit because, say like a guy with the wider waist, it keeps those guys from coming in and doing well. Because they have that weight in their waist, they can't put that, you know, that extra muscle in their arms or their legs.
Right.
So it keeps the aesthetics going in class, you know, pretty easily. Yeah, you could say you can get rid of the weight limit, and they could just, you know, the judges could just choose guys who were, you know, more aesthetic. But I guess as we've seen that doesn't always happen. And then it becomes, you know, it kind of gets murky when, you know, like you said, a Branch Warren comes in 100% shredded and you got Cedric softer. So I understand why I think the weight limit should stay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and I understand why it's in there. I mean, theoretically, open bodybuilding should have been about retaining that taper. You know, there shouldn't have been a point where we had to qualify that and say, oh, well, classic is different because it's all about having a taper. And therefore, if we have a weight limit, you'll have a smaller bone structure, smaller hip structure. And with that, you know, retain your taper. Open bodybuilding should be about that. We obviously kind of didn't keep it there, so to speak. So that's why I'm curious with checks and balances for classic, whether it's a weight limit, you know, or even doing possibly measurements, saying if you have a ratio, you know, shoulder to waist that's over a certain amount, you're not going to excel in classic. Do you think, like, let's say we get to this point, we're seeing all these guys with huge talent, yourself, you know, Breon, like you mentioned, Chris Bumstead, and we're going to talk in a minute about all the pro bodybuilders that are switching to classic. In these next few years, I think we're going to see people really pushing the upper end of that weight limit, you know, where they really are maxing out and can't really put on any more size without, you know, growing out of the division. When that's the case, in your opinion, should conditioning be rewarded as it has been in bodybuilding, meaning on average, harder and more extreme, other things equal, you know, even muscle bellies, even structure, harder, drier wins. Should that be a principle that they, you know, push for in classic, in your opinion?
Yeah, I do. I think, I mean, if they both have great physiques, I love being shredded. I think coming in shape is a big part of it. And a lot of people, I know a lot in the first, especially in the first year of classic, people, and I got hit for it as well, they would say like, oh, you shouldn't be that lean. Arnold wasn't that lean, blah, this guy. But honestly, I don't think classic physique is, and I've referenced Arnold a few times, but I don't think classic was meant to replicate the 70s.
Yeah.
More so like, even like the late 80s, where these guys like were like a Sean Ray, where he was, you know, came in shape, he had good muscle. He, you know, he had the taper midsection, you know, that kind of look more so.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned Sean Ray. In your mind, who stands out? Give us five big names that represent to you the best classic physiques. go ahead.
Okay, so Sean Ray, Wheeler Brada.
Yeah.
I love Flex Wheeler. There's a guy named Terry Pastel, which was awesome as well.
Yeah, I thought it was Theory, but
I'm not sure. A lot of these guys, I've never heard the name actually said out loud.
Sure, no, I'm familiar.
And there was another guy. He won Mr. USA in 2008. I can't think of it right now. But instead of him, I would say I love Muhammad Makhri.
Yeah. So what did you think last year? You mentioned Flex a couple times, you know, and last year Flex had his return to the stage and did classic. A lot of talk one way or the other, whether it was going to be a repeat of Livroni. You know, and I felt he did respectable. What did you think about seeing Flex get back up there and do his thing again?
You know, it was awesome to have him there and to talk to him. But I do respect, you know, he came in shape. He did what the best he could do, you know, with, you know, what he had at the time. And I think I really appreciate the judges being pretty fair with his placing. I think it was all handled really well. They gave him the chance to, you know, stand on stage and do his routine. I think that was handled, you know, perfectly the way they went about doing that.
And I thought it was also nice that it didn't get quite the hoopla publicity of Livroni's comeback. Meaning, yeah. I mean, like, I love Kevin. You know, he's from your neck of the woods right there. Terrence, living right near him. And I interacted with him a lot over the years. Obviously, I respect the hell out of Flex. But with Kevin, at a certain point, you know, as they pumped it up more and more, and the debate just went on and on if he was going to beat Phil Heath. I felt it lost some of its power, because the power to me was the old fans getting to experiencing that one more time, you know, seeing him come out to his music. Like when he came out and they were playing his music, and for 30 seconds, man, I got goosebumps and it took me back. And it was cool with Flex that, like, there wasn't all this talk about him, you know, winning the class. There was some in the beginning, but I don't think people were pushing for it like they were with LeBroni. So he was allowed to get, he was able to get up there and do his thing and really, you know, go out on a great note, I thought.
I think so too.
So in the last few months, Terrence, we've seen, you know, so much of the up and coming talent that went pro in bodybuilding now switching to classic. And, you know, so you did that shortly after turning pro. I think the real standout poster child here, as soon as he turned pro, was Chris Bumstead, you know, announcing that he's switching over. And I kind of had the feeling then, like, this guy is probably going to be pushing to lead this division.
Yeah.
But then more recently, you know, we saw Regan Grimes. And with him, it was interesting because you saw him literally on the fence. You know, do I push to get as big and freaky as possible? Or do I, you know, put some limits on that? And now last week, Cody Montgomery. These are guys that were really supposed to be the next generation of open men's bodybuilders. You know, where we talked about them, Cody setting all these records at team nationals and whatnot, winning USAs. And with that, you know, it's potentially a little scary for the future of open bodybuilding, depending on what you think is going to happen. Again, in your opinion, I don't need any firm commitments here, but what do you see as the future for open pro bodybuilding? Do you see a lot of the new breed, the younger generation, kind of playing their odds better and possibly opting for classic? Or do you think you were always just going to see, you know, a certain amount of people that are just going to push that envelope, chase size, no matter what?
First, I want to talk about I wanted to talk about a little bit about Regan and Cody switching.
Do it.
Just because this is a popular topic. But honestly, I think with Regan, I think he would. So he took second last year in Vancouver. Just doing what he was doing, fine. I think with that whole situation, I've listened to Sergio, and even though he's an ass about it, I think he's right that if he would have just stayed, you know, where he was, he would have been, you know, did just fine. So, and I don't think him switching to classic is a great idea in terms of his placing. I mean, marketability, he's a pretty boy, so I think that'll be fine. But I think he could have been like the new era for, like you said, the new era for bodybuilding, where these guys, you know, he had a nice taper, a nice look. He could have brought back that to the open class.
Do you think Bumstead could have? If Bumstead would have stayed in bodybuilding and said, I mean, because he's young and he can clearly carry a lot more size on that frame without ruining his lines. Do you think he could have been that next generation bodybuilder that, you know, kind of moved it back in the direction that we'd like to see it move in?
I think so. And I think, you know, now that we're talking about it, I think this is an issue that we're going to see, like, where a lot of these, you know, these guys who could have potentially brought bodybuilding back to, you know, I guess the former glory of what, you know, what some people would like to say.
Sure.
They're leaving bodybuilding to do classic. Mm-hmm. And like, because which is, you know, kind of crazy, I think. Which kind of does worry me about bodybuilding, but there's plenty of bodybuilders. But before I said it, there's plenty of, you know, younger bodybuilders who are doing things. I don't want to discredit them. You got, you know, your Kevin Jordans, you have your Nathan Diashas. I don't know how old Lionel Bajecki is, but he has a good physique.
Sure.
So there's potential for bodybuilding to do just fine. And I will say as well, that I went to do a guest posing in Curacao a few weeks ago, and Rolly was there, really, and he kind of stole all my fans. So there's still
well, Rolly's riding that freak train better than anybody right now, man. Every picture that they put out of that dude blows minds all over again.
So there's still love for bodybuilding, and I don't think that's going to change. And I think another cool aspect is it could, like, yeah, there may be less total competitors in the open class, but, you know, people are always complaining about, you know, there's too many pros, there's too many this. So, you know, it could be a good thing where you see the top of the cream of the crop, you know, rising in the open class.
Sure.
I think we just have to wait and see.
Do you think, I'm tempted to think, and I'm curious your opinion on this. It almost seems like it's a difference in kind of overall values and draw. Yeah. Meaning, like, give me an example. You know, I told you I came up with Dorian and Ronnie. And because of that, like, when I started getting into bodybuilding, I was overweight my whole life. But take someone who stays lean pretty easily. Scott, you know that the era of the perma bulker came about.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Where like we had a lot of dudes, and I'm talking just amateur guys that go to the gym. I'm not talking upper level competitors, but that were kind of okay with being fat.
There was like, you know? That was like most everybody in the gym then, wasn't it? It's different because everybody's in shape for Instagram now. It was different then.
I don't think it's just the Instagram thing though. I think it's a shifting in values, meaning, you know, during the Mass Monster era, big and freaky and strong at all costs. And if you didn't, you know, put the pedal through the floor with that, you were a quote unquote pussy, you know, not to use some vulgar language, but you weren't a full man. You know, you were, oh, you're just a men's physique guy and you're a weekend warrior. You're not committed to, you know, being all in like I am. Whereas nowadays, Terrence, I mean, I'm assuming you would have been mortified, you know, coming up the ranks if you were told, hey, man, you just got to be fat for a while. And you just, that's the way it is. Yes? Yes?
No, I've been fat. I told you, like, nothing has changed. Like, it's getting better, too, where this year I've actually stayed pretty lean. But last year I got up to 195, which is pretty heavy. Heaviest I've ever been. And I cut down to maybe 170-something.
Okay.
So I get kind of heavy. I get kind of fat. You just don't see it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and there's a part of me though that almost thinks the next generation is gonna actually have learned from the previous generation. Meaning, you know, you don't have to get sloppy in the off season. And the reason I bring this up is because, like, when you start going to regional shows, let's not talk about nationals, let's not talk about the pro level, but any regional show, it's frightening in the last 5 years. Where the bodybuilders are often the least in shape.
Yes. You know?
And I'm not talking the class winners. I'm talking averages here.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they get so sloppy and heavy in the off season that they don't value the aesthetic quite as much as they value big. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you think about Cody switching over? You think he's going to be successful?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I love Cody. Cody's the one that took the youngest pro title from me.
Okay.
But
guys are all kicking it around.
But I love him. But I honestly don't think he's gonna do too well in it.
Just because you don't think they'll have the lines.
Yeah, I think it's for him to look good. Some people honestly just need a little bit more mass to look really good, and I think he's one of those people. We'll see. Whenever he gets ready for a show, I'm feeling since he lives down in Florida, he might do like the Tampa Pro or something.
Okay.
But I think that was the big thing. A lot of you guys don't look, you know, quite as good with a lot less math.
No, I agree. Did Cody say he's gonna try to do a classic show this year in 2018?
He didn't come out and say it, but he when people do that hashtag stuff, he did like the 2018
right.
Yeah,
thanks. He's letting everybody know I'm going to be relevant again this year. So start paying attention. I'm going to do something.
Yeah, basically.
So you think maybe he just doesn't have the right joint structure and muscle bellies to be quite as impressive? Because I understand what you're saying completely. The shape of your muscle bellies and ultimately your bone structure is going to kind of determine how cartoonish or ballooned out, you know, your final look is.
Yeah. And I think that's gonna be his issue. I think that's the biggest thing with him.
Yeah. So Terrence, let me ask you this. You know, we've talked a lot about turn pro and bodybuilding, doing classic. Last year, you know, and Bob Chick has come out and said there's no basis for these rumors at all. So it's not happening. But there was a short stretch where there was all these rumors swirling that the IFBB was thinking about introducing an under 185 class, you know, in addition to the 212 class. So that anyone who turned pro as a lightweight, welterweight, middleweight would, you know, or even possibly a light heavy, would have a chance of still being competitive as a pro bodybuilder. What, if anything, would make you consider switching back to men's bodybuilding? If they had an under 185 class and you felt, you know, your invested effort would actually be rewarded, would you want to make the switch back?
Yeah, I would switch back to if it was 185 class. When I was just getting started out in bodybuilding, you know, I was just a guesstimate, but I was thinking like, hey, I think like around 185 is where my physique would really shine. Actually, it's pretty weird, but I think I would switch back over at to that division. if they had it, if they ever had it.
So bodybuilding is still your calling, so to speak, meaning even though you're still doing all the things that bodybuilder are doing, you call yourself a classic physique competitor, but in your heart of hearts, you're always going to be a bodybuilder and wanting to go back to that.
You know, I like to, you know, if there's an option, like a lot of people, they're like, oh, I don't want to get the, like I said, I haven't had the issue yet to where I have to, you know, make weight or anything like that, like in classic. So, like I said, my weight limit for classic is like 170, 175. So I would definitely, if I reached that limit and they had that 185 division, I would definitely switch over to gain extra 10 pounds.
All right, so let's take it another direction then. Let's say in this next year you make some monster gains. I believe you're trying to bring your arms up more than anything. You get your arms up. Your weight's kind of capping out right at that limit where you start to realize you're not going to be able to make more size jumps without really struggling to make the weight cutoff for classic. And the reality is, for any listeners who haven't competed, my opinion, making weight, there's usually more wiggle room than you think. You know, like unless you need to lose 20 pounds of muscle, chances are you can usually make a weight if you have to. But would you personally actually limit further growth in order to stay in classic physique?
You know,
because that's a hard one. I mean, if you're a bodybuilder and that's what inspired you to start with, at what point do you say, all right, you know, my job is to hit these stats and I signed up for the job, so I'm going to limit my growth moving forward?
That's a really tough question because, you know, I don't know. it's a tough question. Yeah.
I'm guessing it depends how you're currently placing. Meaning, like, if you're winning pro show after pro show, you have a strong incentive to stay classic, even if it means limiting growth, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I want to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Johnny Sebastian. A lot of people don't know him, but he's doing something really cool right now where, you know, he's doing like what, you know, he's doing what a lot of people probably wouldn't do, where he started out in men's physique. You know, he went to the Olympia. I think he got top 10 when classic came out. He's like, yeah, you know what? I want to switch to that. And last year he made it to Olympia again. And he's like, you know what? I'm still growing. And now he's switching to 212. And he's I've never heard of anybody ever doing that before, you know.
From classic to 212, and
yeah, from physique to classic to 212.
Okay, yeah. And, well, in theory, that's what they're supposed to do. Meaning, we hear that all the time, like, oh, it's stepping stones. We just don't see people really doing it because most people become very good at one specific division and kind of ride it out. You know, Flex Lewis syndrome, perfect example.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I don't think it's really a stepping stone. I mean, I've heard people say that. I think it's more so like you said, where your body fits in, you know, what you can do well at. I see a lot of classic physique guys and, you know, just like where some of them just don't, like, it's just all about structure. Like, some of them wouldn't do very well in classic, but at the same time, you know, like I said, if someone was to downgrade, like a lot of these classic guys, like Breon would do terrible in men's physique. So it's just all about kind of where your structure is, you know, how that is.
Why do you think Breon would do terrible in men's physique?
I don't think he has the shape for it.
Yeah. In terms of like width and taper, you think, or?
You know, it's like a look, like. He has a you know, he has a V taper, but like a lot of the classic guys I see, their stuff is ridiculous. Like Jeremy Potvin I think men's physique has like the best like shoulder to waist ratios out of the division.
I agree. Meaning, I don't think Breon is the best tapered necessarily, but like same with Sean Ray. Like Sean Ray wasn't getting any awards for having the widest clavicles. Yeah. But he still had an incredibly athletic look. And Breon reminds me of Sean in that regard. It's more of an overall athletic, muscular athletic look than having the crazy, crazy, crazy taper. But really, we know Breon's not going to win men's physique just because he doesn't have enough hair gel, man. he's got to step up his hair gel game.
Makeup on.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So recently we saw, you know, Phil Heath put this video out. saying the classic physique competitors were weekend warriors, you know, seemed to not give quite the respect that he could to the division. And you've talked a little bit about the different divisions dogging each other and stuff like that. In your honest opinion, is there really a difference between the divisions in terms of the work ethic required, the investment?
I think it's very, it varies from person to person. Like I said, me, it's the same for me. But like, for like, say someone like Chris Bumstead or Regan, where they were pretty much at the top of the weight limit from the get-go, you know, it kind of becomes a little bit easier. They don't have to push the calories anymore because they're already at that limit. They don't have to, you know, do certain things where, you know, where a bodybuilder has to, you know, think about gaining size. So I can understand it to a certain extent, because I guess the top two right now are really capped out on, you know, Breon and Chris are both capped out on the weight limit. So I understand it's a little bit easier for them, but it's not the same thing for everybody, honestly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, we still have to, they still have to train. They're training just as hard. I've seen Chris lift some heavy ass weight. I've seen Breon lift some heavy weights. I can lift some heavy weights from time to time as well. So I think the biggest difference is the food portion, not the training at all.
Yeah. So you're moving heavy ass weights. We got to hear a little bit. Tell us what are your best lifts? I know you're a big squatter, correct?
I can squat pretty. I haven't been squatting a lot actually recently, but I've done, I think the best I've done was like 455-ish for like 8.
Nice.
But honestly, I mean, if I push it, I could probably do more. Like when I was in the military, I was getting like not like major injuries, but like little injuries here and there from running and sprints and stuff all the time, where it kept setting me back in my training. Which really was really irritating. But I think my legs, and I've been lifting some heavy weights with dumbbells too. I got like 150 for 5 the other day for incline bench press.
Very nice.
So it's getting there. It's getting there.
Are you still in the service?
No, Terrence? I am. I got out like a month before the Olympia last year.
Okay, so you don't have to do the PT tests and all that stuff anymore?
Yeah. And I don't understand how somebody like Cedric and then any other serviceman, I don't know how they do it. Like, it was legit very tough for me. And then like, I got some 212, you know, friends who are in the service, and they just run it just fine. David Henry ran it fine. And yeah. I'm like, we're the same height, but you weigh like 50 pounds more than me. You know?
They're angrier. maybe not Cedric, but Dave Henry. He's angrier. He's been doing it longer.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. All right, Terrence. So in 2016, you made your pro debut at the Prestige Crystal Cup. And the following week, you went to Tampa and you won. You took first place at the Tampa Pro. Mm-hmm. Now, I personally, you know, I was watching Matt Porter pumping you up for the Olympia. And, you know, well, straight up, like, he was posting all the pictures. You had a really good overall look, really polished, and, you know, not just symmetry and size, but, like I said, kind of the overall picture. So I personally thought, you know, you'd be fighting for a top five placing, or you very well could be. But the division's still young enough that, you know, no one really knows where it's going. And that's part of what makes it interesting. Based on how you did at Tampa, did you personally feel you had a good chance walking in that Olympia to walk out with the title? Take us through your prep leading into that Olympia and kind of where your head was at. Being such a young dude, you know, what was it like?
You know, so it's funny, like, with the Prestige Crystal Cup, I took third place, and I had been off stage for like a year, and I was a little nervous, you know, going into this new division, seeing all of the talent, you know, from earlier that year. And I took third at that show, and that kind of got me thinking, like, okay, I can probably do pretty good in this division, and against guys, you know, much heavier. I'm pretty sure I was the lightest dude every single time I hopped on stage that year. And so I went to the Tampa Pro and won that. I beat out Damn Charles at that show, and I thought I could do, you know, from that point on, I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I got a chance in this. It's pretty cool. And I was hoping for either between third and fifth place. Top five was my goal, honestly. And that's what I was set out for. I saw, honestly, no disrespect to Danny Hester or anything like that, but even that year, I saw Breon, and I was like, I thought Breon should have taken it. I'm just a big fan of his physique,
yeah,
in general. But I thought I could take up to fifth place, and when I got ninth, thinking back, a few weeks after the show, at the time, it didn't really hit me. I was just happy to be on stage, do my routine and stuff,
right?
And but you know, thinking back, I was a little bit disappointed with the placing. And honestly, like you said, the judging was kind of all over the place. I would say you had Danny, I think Arash, then Sadiq, which Sadiq's conditioning was, you know, awful that year. And it's funny how, you know, it's weird with the years right now. 2017.
you're not used to it being 2018 yet, is what you're saying. Gotcha.
2017 Olympia, he came in like 10 times better shape. I gave him props for that.
Yeah.
And but he placed like much worse. He took seventh this year. So yeah. It was really frustrating. Like I felt like Tony Friedman, like you said earlier, like I didn't know, you know, what was going on. I felt like, you know, me and Danny were similar sizes, you know, height wise, you know, it's similar shapes in a sense. You know, I was thinking, if they're gonna pick Danny to, you know, win the show, you know, how did I get, you know, ninth place? And you know, honestly, I didn't let it frustrate me too much. I know a lot of people. There was a picture circulated. It was circulating for almost a year, honestly, with me and Sadiq. And you know, I didn't make that picture. And but you know, a lot of people, when they lose the show, they post up a picture next to the guy and they say like, "How did this happen?" or whatever.
Right.
And I'm not the type of person to do that. I just, you know, just buckled down, and you know, the next year I took sixth place. I moved up three spots. So you know, that's all you can really do, man. You can't let this stuff get to you too much. You can't. A lot of people take it really personally, where, you know, you kind of have to separate yourself from your physique in a sense, so you don't get too hurt by certain things.
Sure. Heat of the moment. So yeah. after that ninth placing, you know, we always hear, "Oh, get feedback from the judges." Did you actually bother, you know, going and getting feedback? And if so, you know, what did they tell you you need to work on? If not, why not? You feel you already have a really good idea of what you need to work on?
So the first year I asked Steve Weinberg, and he said basically just put on some more size. And basically that's, yeah, I agree with him that I need to put on some more size. And like, I'm pretty, and I can, you know, pick apart my physique and see what I need to work on. I know I needed, you know, bigger arms to compete with some of these guys, and a little bit more size, especially at the Semper Pro. I only weighed 157 pounds.
Okay. And
guessing Darren was probably like 200 or something. You know, Breon was like 185. So yeah, I'm, you know, I understand, you know, that situation where I need to get a little bit heavier to compete a little bit better.
Now, do you feel, you know, we obviously always hear about politics. It's the word we're not supposed to talk about. I'm not going to say politics, but do you feel you need to push your name and your image out there a little more, specifically so the judges are, you know, looking for you when you get there? Like, do you feel the next time you get there, assuming you get another pro win this year, you'll have an easier time being seen in that lineup?
You know, I think that does, I think it does to a certain extent. It's kind of weird because politics thing, or maybe I just don't understand it, because like, if it was, you know, all about politics or whatever, then I don't think Danny would have won. Sadiq would have won, you know, or even right. The last Olympia, Sadiq won, it took seventh. And but it's kind of like, I don't know. It's weird. But anyway, I do think getting your face out there before a show does play a big part. I think competing and the judges seeing you, and honestly, it shouldn't be that way, but that's how it is, honestly. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't want to knock him because I was a huge fan, but I think the prime example of that, in my opinion, would be Darren Charles, you know, switching to classic. He's got a great physique, but I didn't see him, you know, being as dominant as they seem to think he was. you know, he was racking up wins, and
it was crazy.
And didn't really have a classic look, you know.
I will say I did, you know what, I say that I try to separate myself. I did get frustrated the last time he beat me in Miami.
Yeah.
It was Diana Cadu's show with it was me. It was only four of us at that show. It was Darum, me, Chris Bumstead, and I don't know his real name, but his nickname is KD. But I was like, you know,
where'd you end up?
I took second, and I'm like, you know what? I would have been fine with Chris beating me. I had no issue with it, but I was surprised that. And that kind of shows you how certain things are with getting your face out there. I had competed.
Right.
Competed. That was my fifth, I think, fifth show that year. Fourth or fifth show. And it was after the Olympia. This was Chris Bumstead's first show. You know, Darum had did like 20, 30 shows that year. So it was in Miami, Darum's hometown. So that kind of goes to the show where, like, it almost makes no sense where Darum took, I'm not sure where he placed at the Olympia in 2017, but, you know, Chris took second. You know, right. Darum took probably, Darum wasn't in the top 10, I don't think.
No.
So, and their physiques didn't change that much. They're already at the top of the limit, you know?
Sure. If nothing else, it shows there's a certain inconsistency. No matter how you explain it away, it's hard to keep those standards consistent, you know, throughout the year and from show to show.
Yeah. And then you can kind of think about it. Maybe, you know, different judges have, it's, you know, it's still opinion-based type of sport where, you know, certain judges like certain looks better, you know, things like that. It's kind of like, you know, certain judges like Branch, certain judges like a Cedric Moore.
Right. So Terrence, you're still in the earlier part of your career, you know, just kind of getting this all rolling. And I think most of us would agree that you have more potential to climb the ranks and do better than, say, in the latter half. You know, Darum is probably getting towards the end of his run. What are you looking forward to in the coming years? You know, what are some of the things on your bucket list that you have to cross off that list or really are excited to do? And that could be doing specific shows or nailing a win, doing the Arnold, or it could just be, you know, meeting people that you looked up to and sharing stage with them. What does the future hold for you? Not just this year, but, you know, over the course of your career.
Oh man. You know, I think about this, you know, every now and again, and it's just so many possibilities. I would really love to, you know, back in the day, guys, you know, the pros used to travel to Europe. They used to do tours and different meet all their fans. And it's kind of, it doesn't happen quite as often anymore. I would love to, you know, one day be able to, you know, travel and do seminars and you know, training seminars, posing seminars across the country, across the world, and really connect with the people. Because, you know, bodybuilding is, you know, it's popular in the U.S., but it's still just as popular in every other country. And I've been out of the country twice to guest pose, and, you know, it's ridiculous, you know, how much these guys love you overseas.
Where'd you go?
I've been to El Salvador and to Curacao.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned the Curacao. So what was it like at Salvador? You showed up, you know, first time you're doing this, I'm assuming. Take us through the actual guest posing.
Okay, so I want to start off. So I went to my home state, Alabama, to do a guest posing. I had maybe three people come and speak to me the whole time from the place I grew up.
You know? Wow.
But now we go to El Salvador where, how did it start off? You know, the guy that we had a host, he's a bodybuilder too. And, you know, he picked us up from the airport. He took us to our hotels. He had all my food ready. Even if it was tough to find, like ground turkey there, turkey there is hard to find. So he had to go to there's only one store that sold it. It was a chain restaurant. And he had to ask them, you know, hey, can you do this for me? And he would buy it from there and bring it back to me.
Right.
Even to the point where, like, that was during the hurricane where I got stuck. He said, you know what, come, you know, he couldn't afford the hotel anymore, but I stayed with him, and I didn't realize it, but he gave me him and his wife's bed. He and his wife ended up sleeping in their son's room with him, and it's just like, oh my God, you know, like, these people were so kind,
yeah.
And, you know, he still paid for all my food while I was there, everything. When I got to the show, they had a crowd of people there ready for the seminar.
That's cool.
And I noticed the difference. I've been to, you know, John Meadows came to my town in Florida when I was living in Florida. And I think only maybe 10 people showed up for his seminar. One of the smartest guys in the industry, right?
Yeah.
And only 10 people showed up. And I made a post about it. And then that's when everybody went to say, oh, I was doing this. I had this going on. I'm like, you had this one chance to get, you know, especially for the coaches out there. Only one coach in the area showed up. And it shows you just how, you know, people value information there, you know, whereas I'm not the smartest guy in, you know, in bodybuilding. I know a little bit, but, you know, still, you know, I had like, I think like 60, 70 people show up for the seminar in El Salvador.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of time I see John goes overseas a lot to do guest posings. And I mean, not guest posings, but seminars, because these guys are really appreciative and they understand that, you know, the value that someone like him brings.
How is bodybuilding, in your opinion, perceived differently, or perhaps what questions were you getting in El Salvador that were almost like surprising to you that you would never hear here in the States? Because I'm assuming the knowledge base, like you said, is pretty different. Is that reflected in your interactions with the fans? Meaning, like, they just really don't know much about, you know, the science of it, or do you find it's pretty equitable?
Yeah, it's very, they didn't know that much over there. The guy I stayed with, he trains with Factory, and so he's got some knowledge. He does pretty well at shows. He could do a top five at nationals. That's where he is right now, physique wise. And he's like the top guy over there. He is to the point where I think he's like one of the few, or if not the only, nutritionist in his country. He goes on like he's even so well, you know, perceived over there, where like we went on television shows for his bodybuilding show.
Nice.
He had a way like almost. It was almost like an ESPN type of deal. We went on there. We went on to a Christian network and did it to promote the bodybuilding show. And it's just crazy. And his wife would say they're not very rich, but when you have a maid coming over to clean up your house every, you know, every other day, I'm like, nah, you guys got a little bit of money and you can afford my food plus your food, you know?
Right.
So he's making, I think, and then to travel like he does, because he doesn't compete in El Salvador because of there's politics with bodybuilding over there too. So he traveled to the U.S. to compete, or to India, or the Europe. So I think there's a need for knowledge over there, and I guess they recognize it.
Yeah, it's very cool. Well, and I think it speaks something, you know, to what you're saying. If you go to a John Meadows seminar and there's only 10 people sitting there, over there there's 70 people waiting there for you. You know, we just have access to so much in this country. It's very easy to take it all for granted and, you know, not appreciate it. In part with the explosion of social media, you know, Scott, when you and I were coming up the ranks, man, seeing a pro was like seeing a unicorn.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Like the first time I saw, you know, Branch guest pose in, I think, 2005, and I was like, oh, my God, is that a human being, you know? So, Scott, you had something you want to ask?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask was, you know, I think a lot of people are looking to you, Terrence, and guys like you, because this whole division is so new, and, you know, we're still watching it evolve. And, you know, we have shows like this where we're asking you questions and we're all trying to figure it out. But I wanted to ask you, with all the younger guys that are coming up in this division right now, what kind of advice would you give to them? Those guys that are still on the state level, they're looking at your pictures, they're seeing you on stage. You know, what would you suggest to them that they should focus on to be the best they can in Classic?
Okay. You know, I want to say this real quick. It's weird because I'm so young, and it's weird because I think about it and I'm like, wow, I was at the first, you know, Classic Mr. Olympia. You know, I kind of am like it's weird. But I would say to the guys hoping to do well in Classic, So like how I got started, I would say, you know, you always don't know everything. Let me start over.
Yeah.
I'm over ahead of myself.
it's a big question. I know that.
It is a big question to give people.
But, yeah, it's going to do in his early 20s. What life advice do you have that's going to influence all these young cats for their whole life?
And the thing is I get it, because you are a young guy, but then we've got these guys that are even younger than you, you know, that are saying, hey, he's got it figured out, you know?
I hate to say it, Terrence, man. You're a poster child now. You're famous.
Exactly.
Like, you got to have your, you know, like Charles Barkley said that one time, I ain't a role model. Well, like it or not, maybe you are. So you got to have your answers to this polished up, buddy.
Okay. So I just wanted to say that you may not have everything figured out, you know, right now. I know a lot of people, even me, I like to have everything, all my ducks lined up or whatever the saying is, where you want to know every single thing before you get started. But, you know, I would like to say, man, a lot of people ask me, should they do a show or should they do this? You know, I started off by myself. I picked up a to Z nutrition magazine with Joel Thomas on the cover. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this meal plan right here. And I didn't, you know, I didn't have a coach or anything like that at the time. I just started. You just get started. You learn as you go. You take knowledge from guys who've been where you've been. You know, don't think you're a lot of these guys too. They think they know everything. And that's what I can attribute a lot of my success to listening to people who've been through it. Hmm. Like my coach Matt Porter, like a John Meadows. You know, where, you know, it saves you so much time. It saves you so much time listening to someone who's been through it. You don't have to go through the same mistakes or things like that. And another thing is, a guy asked me the other day, he asked me, could he do well in classic? He didn't have much muscle mass or anything like that. And yeah, I told him, I struggled with the same thing myself, you know, could I do well in bodybuilding? And honestly, the answer is you really don't know until you get there. You don't know what your genetic potential is until you push yourself, until you get to that point. So, you know, you just need to work and put in the effort, and eventually, you know, you will know. But don't just give up before you get started.
So you never would have guessed that you would have been where you are today, you're saying, when you started, huh?
You know, I just didn't know. I was, I had a lot of self-doubt. But I just kept pushing and, you know, hoping, and I would get there.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm sure everybody else out there does too.
Well, and to tie it together, I think that's excellent, because it turns out, Scott, that the life advice to be successful in classic for the new generation is the same as everything else, which is put your best foot forward and try hard and see where it goes. You know, like, quit overthinking it. Just put in the work, and if you're meant to be great at it, they'll let you know.
Yeah. You know?
All right, Terrence, that's awesome, man. Why don't you tell listeners, what do you have coming up for 2018 in terms of, you know, your competition plan? I'm sure you're hoping to get back to Olympia. And any other plans that you got coming up in 2018? And then how listeners can get a hold of you for coaching, guest posing, anything else that they're interested in?
Okay. So for shows right now, it's still tentative. Thinking maybe Toronto Pro, Vancouver Pro. I'm trying to get out into Canada. I like to travel a lot, so I like to go to places I haven't been. So Toronto or Vancouver. I want to do the Tampa Pro as well to get back to my home gym and my 40 gym. And then the Olympia, hopefully. And then after that, I'm hoping I can save enough money to go to Seoul, Korea. There's the Asian Grand Prix out there that's happening, which would be an awesome show to go to. But besides that, guys, you can get hold of me at my email, roughdiesel1@gmail.com, or Instagram, rough_diesel. And check out my YouTube page. I'm putting up some content, vlogs right now. I'm trying to put up some more detailed stuff pretty soon. I just need to get a videographer to work with, new to the area. So, but that's how you guys can get a hold of me.
Very cool. Well, Terrence, I got to say, we put you on the spot to be the spokesman for the entire classic physique division.
Oh, and, my God. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I know. You texted me last night. You're like, man, there's some hard questions on here. And they're only hard questions if, you know, you're worried about certain officials listening and your answer wasn't quite. The point is, like, all of us, I think, are in a similar boat right now where we're just not sure where the sport's going to be in 10 years. You know, so much has changed.
Yeah.
And end of the day, if you love the sport, if you love bodybuilding, which I know all three of us do, and I know everyone listening to the show does, it needs to be an open dialogue. You know, it doesn't matter. And by, you know, purposely not talking about stuff, it's not going to solve anything. So there's some topics that are really interesting that have been forced to the fore in the last decade with the Mass Monsters and all that. We need dudes like you coming out and talking to the new kids about, guess what? It's still about hard work and paying your dues and, you know, not being Insta famous and all that. So I thank you immensely for your time and sorry for putting you so much on the spot. But I think you did an excellent job with
thank you.
All right, everybody. We're going to let Scott get rolling over to Costa Rica and enjoy his time. We're going to let Terrence go enjoy his sunny Friday afternoon. And beyond that, I want to thank everybody for listening to another edition of Beyond Driven Radio. We will be back next time with something else interesting, I certainly hope. And Scott won't be dying of some Costa Rican disease that he brings back.
Hopefully.
All right, everybody. Have a good one. Peace. What is my name?
Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Beyond Driven, only at the Advices Radio Network. And hey, we're going to take just a brief hiatus for a few more days while I finish up my trip out of town. But before you know it, we will be back. So stay subscribed to iTunes or Stitcher and pay attention to our social media, because before you know it, another episode is going to drop. And until then, keep training hard, follow your nutrition, and reach your goals. Guys, thanks for listening to Advices Radio Network, and we will see you soon. Team Warrior Within, founded by David and Nikki Johnston. More than 14 years experience as full-time trainers and coaches. Through their online coaching service, they can help anybody who has a passion to make progress. From everyday people just looking to lose weight, build muscle, trim up, to contest prep for beginners, all the way to working with top-level IFBB pros. 100% month-to-month rates, no contracts. Check out the website, teamwarriorwithin.com. And visit Facebook, Team Warrior Within.
Hey guys, this is John Meadows.
And this is Scott Stevenson.
I invite everybody to come out to our seminar, Bodybuilding Fact and Fiction.
Thursday, March 1st at the Doubletree Suites in downtown Columbus. Just before the Arnold Classic festivities, come on in and meet John Meadows, IFBB Pro, the Mountain Dog himself, and Dr. Scott Stevenson. Stay all day from 9 a.m. to noon, then after lunch, 1 o'clock till 4. Starting out with an a.m. pancake breakfast, then all-day lectures. Q&A as time permits, plus best bar ever, and pre-workout from Granite Supplement Speed Force to get you on your way to the gym. For more information, go to drscottstevenson.com. That's drscottstevenson.com. And hope to see you guys there. Advices Radio Network.